Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood is brought to you by First Conservative Baptist Church. Now let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Ken Timmerman today. He is the author of the book, The Election Heist. And he has, in his book, described what we're finding taking place today in this election. This is the reason I'm advocating today, ladies and gentlemen. We're just about a week before election, just a few days before election now. And every vote counts. We need to recognize that. And, Ken, as we talk about that, what does it mean? And I've read articles about it, and I'm familiar with it, but perhaps our listeners would not be. What does it mean, dirty voter rolls? What is a dirty voter roll?
This is a very important concept to understand, and it's part of the, again, part of the Democrat strategy. Under the 1993 Voting Rights Act, otherwise known as Motor Voter, states were required to clean their voter rolls, which means to take dead people off the rolls and to take people who had moved out of the jurisdiction off the voter rolls. Why is this important? Well, we're seeing it today in spades. It's important because some states will insist on sending mail-in ballots to everybody who's on the voter roll. So if you've got 100,000 people in your state who are not active voters, who are either dead or they've moved out of the state, they're going to get a ballot, and somebody could intercept that ballot and vote it. There was a study done last year by our friends at Judicial Watch. They looked at 353 counties nationwide and found there were 1.8 million registered voters more, people on the voter rolls, 1.8 million more than were eligible citizen voters. I mean, absolutely extraordinary to see that. That is clearly a margin of victory for one candidate over another. Remember, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote in 2016 by about 3 million. Well, she won California by 4.5 million. So that one state alone gave her popular vote margin. And President Trump was saying afterwards there were, according to some of these organizations, such as Judicial Watch, as many as 1.5 million to 2 million illegal voters registered. In other words, people who had either died or were not citizens or had moved out of that jurisdiction. So it's very important to have clean voter rolls so every single vote counts. Think of it this way. You know, if your vote is a garden, is a flower in a garden, all of those illegal votes are weeds that are choking out the flower. And that's what we have to prevent, and that's why we need to have clean voter rolls.
It's a good illustration. I'm looking at an article that says the dirty voter rolls plunge huge mail-in vote risk disaster for election law experts, according to their position. The article says, I'm focused on Nevada because that's the state that rushed to vote by mail, said Christian Adams, president and general counsel of the Indianapolis-based Pacific Legal Foundation, a nonprofit interest law firm. Quote, they have thousands of people improperly registered, and all of them showing up at commercial addresses, which are not supposed to be in Nevada. And they go on with the elongated article of how the foundation had gone out, following up on some of those, and they found the mail-out ballot had gone to a vacant lot or had gone to a place of business or an abandoned mine, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they go on to say, people do not live in vacant lots. They don't live in auto repair shops. They don't live in casinos. They don't live in liquor stores. And yet that's where the ballots had been mailed, indicating, just as you've said, that the rolls had not been cleaned up. And going back to your statement where President Trump had determined that some million and a half, whatever the number was, that were not proper numbers, I recall that he had started to have something done in relationship to that, and would ask all of the supervisors of elections nationwide to give an account to the federal government. And state after state after state, blue states primarily, refused to do so, refused to go back, clean up the rolls, refused to give an account to the federal government on their ballots and how they were mailing them out. Are you familiar with that?
I am, and it is really quite an extraordinary story in itself. It was a commission that the president set up not long after he was elected and took office in 2017, headed by Kris Kobach of Kansas, who had been a former Secretary of State and was a trailblazer, really, in trying to achieve election integrity, to make sure that voter rolls were clean and that the vote tallying process was correct and that people had voter ID when they showed up at the polls. And you're absolutely correct. California was one of those states that refused to cooperate, refused to transmit information to this commission. And in fact, all the states, my memory is correct, something like 24 states refused to cooperate, and they were all run by Democrats. Why did they refuse to cooperate? Because they did not want for the federal government to realize how developed were these efforts at stealing elections in their states. And I think it's going on today. I think that's absolutely clear. And again, I talk about a lot of that in the election heist. All of these gimmicks that they use to vote the graveyards, to vote the vacant lots, the empty mines. I saw that report by Christian Adams, and he also is one of those heroes for trying to achieve election integrity around the country. He endorsed my book, by the way. He also endorsed my book. I was very gratified for that. But there's only one reason why you would not want voter ID. There's only one reason you would not want to have clean voter rolls, and that is to allow for voter fraud, period.
To basically do as the Democratic spokesperson said in that article I read earlier, to cheat, steal, and lie, do anything to win the election. This is an article, Ken, Colorado caught asking illegal aliens and dead people to register to vote. As the 2020 election approaches, Colorado's Democratic administration has been caught sending postcards to illegal aliens and dead people asking them to register to vote. And it goes on to talk about the process of which they were using there. In fact, I believe it's in Colorado where they've already mailed out. It's either Colorado or Nevada where they mailed out literally millions of unsolicited ballots. What's wrong with that? Let's say that here's a state, whether it's Colorado, Nevada, or another state. They mail out, they've got all of those names on the voter rolls, and they just automatically mail out ballots to each and every one of them that's unsolicited, not asked for. Is there harm in that? What should we understand from that?
Well, here's the problem, and I believe, by the way, it was both Nevada and Colorado that have been mailing out unsolicited ballots. The problem is that the Democrats are very smart, and they know who's really voting. They know who has voted in past elections. They've got all of these databases, and they know exactly where those ballots are going, and they can intercept them very easily, either through the Postal Service itself, because remember, most of the people, I don't mean to impugn the Postal Service, but you know, most of the people who work in the Postal Service belong to the SEIU, the Government Employees Union, and that is a heavy backer of the Democrat Party, and a small percentage of those people are going to do whatever it takes, intercept the ballots, vote the ballots illegally, and turn them back in. That is the problem. You could have literally millions of illegal ballots voted in this election in key swing states. Nevada, by the way, is now considered a swing state. Normally it's gone Democrat, but the president has made great inroads there. Guess what? Among the Hispanic population. So the Democrats are worried. And as you say, they will do whatever it takes. They will lie, cheat, and steal. And we got to stop them.
You touched on the Hispanic population, as I understand it from one of the Fox reports. In 2016, there was about 11% of the Hispanic population voting for Trump, and I believe that number today is about 26%. And the same also with the black vote, it has exponentially increased. Ken, let me ask you a question for the benefit of our listeners. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Ken Timmerman. Ken is the author of the new book, The Election Heist. Ken, there's a group in Alabama. It's a Democrat group, coalition that's put together, supposed to be a nonprofit, called New South's Souls to Polls Initiative. They're paying churches $6 per person that they help to get to the polls to vote. Is there a problem with that legally?
Yeah, there sure is. I mean, it reminds me of the days of walking around money in Chicago. You know, this is how John F. Kennedy won the presidency in 1960. You're seeing things like that on an even deeper scale, on a bigger scale, up in Minneapolis in the Somali community, the Somali American community. There's a report recently about that where Somali American voters were getting $200 cash to go out and vote for Democrats, especially for Ilhan Omar, the anti-Semitic, really, frankly, racist member of Congress from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Yeah, with Ilhan Omar, in fact, Project Veritas produced an undercover video showing her henchmen, as I would call them, out in the streets, and one of them had over 300 ballots in the back seat of his car, and he had paid $200 per ballot to have them signed, and the money coming out of the coffers of Ilhan Omar. In fact, she has given to her husband, which heads up one part of her election campaign, some $600,000 to be dispersed at $200 a shot to get ballots signed. And with that being known, the federal government's aware of it. Federal government's aware of the fact that she is here illegally. She lied on her INS to get here as a immigrant. And yet we find nothing being done. Can that harm the sense of need to vote if it is fully known that these things have taken place, and there seems to be no repercussions, seems to be no law that says you can't do that and that will stop that? How should we see that from the standpoint of just the sheer humanity of us all as we watch this election and attempt to steal it in that fashion? How should we respond, especially as conservatives and Christians? Should we just wring our hands, sit on our hands, and say my vote doesn't count because they're stealing the election? What is your position on what we need to do to challenge our listeners, to challenge our people today to get out and vote?
Vote, get everybody in your family to vote. Our nation depends on it. Our future depends on it. The country we're going to leave behind to our children and our grandchildren depend on it. We have, America can go two ways. We can recover our origins. We can continue to know the prosperity that the Lord has given us to know here in this country, or we can go on the road to socialism, and we can lose our freedoms, and we can become wards of the state. We can become basically whatever the government wants us to do, we'll be able to do, and if the government doesn't like what we say or what we do, we won't be able to say or do it. So this is really a very big election because of that. You touched on a couple things I do want to address very quickly, though. First of all, the FBI. It's distressing to me to see that the FBI is not pursuing cases like Ilhan Omar. You mentioned her immigration status. It's pretty widely known and well documented on the public record now that she came here illegally. She should be deprived of her United States citizenship, and she should be deported. Now, why has that not happened? Number one, the FBI has not investigated. How does the FBI open an investigation when a prosecutor does? It's the prosecutor that then tells them to investigate. They can't just go out and open an investigation because they read a news article. There has to be a prosecutor. Guess who is the attorney general in the state of Minnesota? It's Keith Ellison, who was put in there by George Soros.
That's right.
He has made sure there will be no prosecution of Ilhan Omar. We have corruption at so many levels in this country, and it's been done primarily by the Democrats and funded by people like George Soros to undermine our system, to undermine our rule of law, and to discourage conservatives and Republicans to vote. Because that was the second thing I wanted to touch on that you raised here. They're trying to discourage us. They're trying to tell us our vote doesn't count, our vote doesn't matter. Yes, it does. Our votes matter. Every individual vote matters. My vote weighs as much, counts as much, as George Soros's does. Your vote counts that much as well. He's just one person. He might think that he can tip the scales, but he's just one person when he gets into the ballot box. Each of us needs to go out and vote. It is not just our civic duty. It's the duty that we owe to our families and to the future of our families.
Amen. Ken, in your book, you give a quote from John Rutherford, which is the House of Representatives, District 4 from Florida. And he said, Americans will be shocked to learn that even their paper ballots are not secure if the software that counts them can be compromised. I believe our listeners need to hear what you mean by that.
Well, this is something that I brought to the attention of John Rutherford, who I've gotten to know over the past couple of years. I think he's a great member of Congress, by the way, and I hope everybody listening here will support him. He's up for re-election, as everybody is in Congress every 2 years. But the scenario in the election heist looks at the electronic tabulating machines. So when you go to vote, you fill out a paper ballot, and then you put it into a scanner, right? And then the actual physical ballot will then drop into a locked box where eventually it can be recounted. After that happens, the ballots are counted electronically, all right? What people think is that when you have a recount, that they're actually physically recounting the paper ballots. Sometimes they will do that. And if they do that, we're okay. But most of the times when they do an audit, what they call an audit, a risk-limiting audit, the night of the election and then the next morning of the election, they don't actually count or recount the physical ballot. They recount the ballot images. In other words, when you scan your ballot, it makes a PDF, and they recount those PDF images. So what I describe in the election heist and what I brought to the attention of John Rutherford was how you can actually – how hackers – can penetrate those systems and it can alter the software in ways that are very difficult, if not impossible, for election officials to see, to discover. And that is something that I have tried to bring to the attention of authorities, and I've spoken to both federal authorities and to our own election supervisors here. People are now becoming aware of this. I've got to also say this, just so people don't think I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing in this book. I'm not telling the hackers anything they don't know. They know how to do this. At a hackers convention 2 years ago in Las Vegas in 2018, called DEF CON 2018, two 11-year-olds were able to hack into a replica of the Florida state voter database. The hacking tools to do the kinds of things that I describe in the election heist are open. Unfortunately, they're available to anybody over the internet. And we know that there is bad intent on the side of the Democrats. What we don't yet know for a fact, but I've described it in a fictional scenario, is how they would actually plot to do these things. But the tools are there. The intent is there. What we don't know if they are actually going to do it. I hope they don't. And I wrote this book to prevent them from doing it.
Well, you state that, and I'm made to remember just recently, it was discovered by the intelligence agencies in America that Iran had gone into a voting system. I've forgotten what state they had gotten into, and had gotten all of the list of the voters and sent out letters with some kind of threat to try to intimidate them in the vote. Are you familiar with that?
I am, and that was one of the things that was announced last night by the FBI director and the director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe. And it was really an extraordinary statement, and the Democrats immediately started to twist it around. What happened is that the Iranians got access – I don't think they named the state. They got access to voter rolls and then started to email people with threats claiming to come from the Proud Boys. And I hear this, I say, who the heck are the Proud Boys? I didn't know who the Proud Boys are. Apparently there's some white supremacist militia of probably 12 people nationwide that the Democrats like to inflate into some fast movement that's going to kill people because they're black or brown or their eyes are green or I don't know what. And so they were getting these threatening emails that said, you're going to vote for Trump. We know if you're not going to vote for Trump, we're going to come after you. We're going to come get you. And so the Democrats jumped on this. They said, look what the Trump campaign is doing. They're trying to intimidate voters of color. This is absolutely terrible. They're sticking the Proud Boys on black and Latino voters and trying to threaten them. Well, no, it turned out it was a disinformation campaign by the Iranians. The Iranians were doing this to discredit Donald J. Trump. It's what they do. They hate Trump. They know that if Trump is reelected, they are their regime in Iran, which again is a horrible anti-Semitic, anti-freedom regime of darkness that has enslaved the Iranian people by a foreign group of Arab mullahs, actually, for 41 years. They know that they're toast. The people will rise up, and I believe that they will have lots of support from people in this country and from our government as well. So the Iranians don't want Donald Trump to win a second term in the presidency. They're desperate to have Biden, who has always supported the mullahs in Tehran. He loves the mullahs in Tehran. He was part of the bad Iran deal. He actually took money from pro-Tehran lobbying organizations when he was a U.S. senator. And I went to some of those events. I wrote news articles about them at the time, right? He and John Kerry. So the Iranians carried this out. And today, what have we heard on the media? Oh, my goodness. It's the Russians who have invented the Hunter Biden scandal. And that's not what the FBI said. That's not at all. They said it was the Iranians who were sending out these emails to intimidate voters. It's just amazing the level of dishonesty that some Biden spokespersons. This was the former mayor of Baltimore, Rawlings Blake, I think her name is. You know, she was there saying that it was a Russian disinformation campaign, the information that we've seen about the Biden emails, which, by the way, today were confirmed by the person who sent them. He said, yeah, I sent those emails. And, oh, yeah, the big guy who was supposed to get 10% of this money from the Chinese communist bank, the big guy refers to Joe Biden.
That's right.
It's just amazing. It's just amazing. The level
that
of dishonesty.
That touches on Biden. And, Ken, let me ask you a question. Just succinctly tell our listeners, is Joe Biden qualified morally, ethically, politically, cognitively, constitutionally? Is he qualified to be president of the United States of America? If not, why not? And if not and why not, what should we do in our vote?
Joe Biden is the leader of what I would call the Biden crime family. And we now know it's the Biden crime family because these emails have come out. They've been authenticated many, many times by multiple sources. We also know Rudy Giuliani mentioned this morning that he went yesterday to the Delaware State Police because of other things that he had discovered on Hunter Biden's computer, child pornography and text messages about child pornography between Hunter Biden and his father. And he said, as a private, if I were a government official and I did not act on this, I would be committing a felony because it's child pornography and it's covered by multiple statutes. As a private citizen, I would be immoral if I did not go to the police with this information. So you have that is on top of everything else. What we know now for a fact is that Joe Biden was selling his position as vice president through his son. And his son was openly talking about that with his father and with his business partners. We know that for a fact. So Joe Biden was corrupt. That type of corruption is illegal. It's unconstitutional. You mentioned constitutionally illegitimate or ineligible. That would make him constitutionally ineligible to be president of the United States because he's corrupt. He's been accepting money from foreign governments. Morally, you can judge yourself on his various positions, whether it's his position on abortion on demand right up until the moment of birth, which is just a disgrace. It's disgusting. You can look at some of his other positions as well. You mentioned cognitively. Well, we're going to see that tonight, I think. In a way, it may be a blessing that the debate commission is going to mute the president's mic for 2 full minutes and let Joe Biden speak for 2 full minutes uninterrupted. I hope people tape that and then transcribe what he says because it will be difficult to make much sense of those two-minute monologues that he has. So, yeah, I think Joe Biden has got a tremendous problems, tremendous liabilities as a candidate, and we would be morally wrong to elect him president, put it that way.
Absolutely. And now one of the things that's come into the picture that's so full and clear now, last few days, in fact, it's been within the last month in particular for the election, where all of the social media, Twitter, Facebook, Google, et cetera, have been laboriously blocking anything that's conservative news. In fact, anything that's about Joe Biden and Hunter Biden, all of the media simply shut it out. Now, social media shut it out. I'm looking at an article that says lawmakers hail DOJ's antitrust lawsuit against Google, which is long overdue. Speak to the issue with social media and whether or not you feel that it is right or wrong and what we should do as a government in relationship to allowing them to shut out free speech and especially conservative free speech.
Well, I think it's pretty clear by now that all of these social media groups, which were protected under the Communications Decency Act, should now lose their protection. The president has spoken about this at many events. It's called the Article 230 or Chapter 230 protections that keep them from being sued as because it says they are not media organizations. They're merely platforms. They're just like your cell phone. But your cell phone provider does not censor your conversations, right? Your cell phone provider does not censor your conversations. Twitter and Facebook and even Google are censoring people's speech on their platform. So they need to be treated like any other media organization so they can be sued. They can be sued for libel. They can be sued for censorship. They can be sued for all kinds of different things under the law. And that, I think, will be the first thing that happens if the president is reelected and if we manage to keep hold of the Senate. By the way, Pastor, that is almost as important as keeping the White House.
Absolutely,
keeping
yes.
The Senate. If we lose the Senate, we're going to be in big, big trouble. We lose the presidency and the Senate. We know what the Democrats are going to do. They're going to make Washington, D.C. a state. They're going to make Puerto Rico a state. That gives them four Democrat, reliable Democrat votes from here to kingdom come. And then they're going to pack the courts and ram all kinds of other socialist legislation through the Senate and get it signed by the president. We must keep the Senate. Good news is that as I look at the polls, I think we will. I think we're going to win back a seat in Alabama. I think John James is going to win in Michigan. I think we're going to ultimately lose one seat net and wind up with 52-48. But everybody needs to vote, friends. You need to get out and vote.
Need to vote, and that to vote will make a difference in our U.S. Supreme Court. They're going to vote Amy Coney Barrett out of the committee today, and then the vote for the full Senate on Monday. And so a vote for President Trump is not just a vote for the man. It's a vote for our freedom. It's a vote for our constitutional liberties. It's a vote for the U.S. Supreme Court for the future. Ken, thank you so much for joining us today. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on Let's Face the Issues. We're looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as once again we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located just 1/2 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study, prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 and on Sunday mornings at 8 on 100.3 FM. For expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard in its entirety at 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM and 93.3 HD3. Tune in and invite others to listen.